I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC, and this is the news.
We'll get you in as quickly as possible.
State of the race, state of the vote. Ballots coming in record numbers.
Feeling like it's November 3rd.
Joe Biden increases his lead in the national polls, but it's still neck and neck with President Trump in some key battleground states. We're on the ground where the election will be decided. Texas officer arrested, charged with murder in the shooting death of this man at a gas station. Now, details on the fast-moving case.
This is not a trivial disease.
COVID surging, fears rising, and rules changing. The White House blocks new FDA vaccine standards. Tonight, what this means for the safety of you and your family.
What is Luca Corberi playing at?
And road rage.
Oh, Luca Corberi, what on earth is he doing?
What caused this go-kart racer to lose it on the track? Good evening. President Trump shut down the long-running coronavirus relief talks in Congress this afternoon. That means no stimulus. Not now. As millions of Americans struggle to pay the bills, big businesses lay off workers and small ones shutter their doors. No more negotiations in Congress until after the election, the president tweeted. The House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, says the announcement shows the White House is in complete disarray. But the top Republican in the Senate, the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, has a different take.
I think his view was that they were not going to produce a result and that we needed to concentrate on what's achievable.
Could you support him, his decision?
I do.
Support it? I do. Both sides pushed to make it happen, but had different plans that never came together. Democrats wanted to spend more money than Republicans. The president says big cities run by Democrats are big spenders that don't deserve federal money. So as he tweeted, I told my representatives to shut it down. Of course, they're your representatives, not his. But Republicans on the Hill needed President Trump's political capital to get something done. And instead, he stopped the whole thing. Both sides tell reporters they're surprised. And so was Wall Street. The Dow dropped more than 500 points on the news. You can see the moment there. No chart yet for the people who likely took it harder. CNBC's Elon Moyes tracking the fallout. Elon, who's hurt the most by this?
Well, Shep, there is so much that is being left behind at the bargaining table here. Let me just give you a little sense of what was supposed to be in this deal. Help for unemployed workers, anywhere between $400 and $600 a week. Another round of direct checks, at the very least for the families that need it the most. Billions of dollars in help for schools to get them to reopen safely and with the right equipment. Relief for the airline industry to prevent thousands of layoffs and aid to small businesses that are struggling because of this pandemic. Now, this is what Danny Meyer, the founder of Shake Shack and the CEO of Union Square Hospitality Group, this is what he said right after the deal fell apart this afternoon. He tweeted, "Can't fathom that there will be no stimulus until after the election. On behalf of millions of restaurant employees still without work, and hundreds of thousands of independent restaurants striving to provide jobs and return vitality to their communities, please reconsider." Now, there are still more than 12.5 million people in this country without a job. And I'm hearing from lawmakers on both sides of the aisle that there is a deal to be had. And Shep, even some Republicans are calling on the president to get back to the negotiating table. They're saying that inaction should not be an option.
Elon, thank you. 4 weeks from today, at this moment, the first polls will have closed on Election Day. Home stretch and voter turnout is shaping up to be historic, the likes of which we have not seen in more than a century. Take a look at the lines today. Early voting kicking off in Ohio, Indiana, New Mexico. More than 4.5 million Americans have already voted, compared to just 75,000 at this point back in 2016. In Florida, the website to register to vote was receiving an unprecedented 1 million requests every hour today. The website crashed. The governor said he's extended the registration deadline. You can say it. Joe Biden in Pennsylvania with a message of unity in Gettysburg. A Monmouth University poll out today shows the former vice president pulling away from President Trump in Pennsylvania, now with a clear 12-point lead. We'll have more on the latest polling in just a moment. There's a group tracking early voting data. It's called the United States Elections Project, and it's predicting 150 million Americans will vote this time. That would be 65% of all eligible voters. And if that happens, it'll be the highest percentage in 112 years since Taft won in 1908. We have reporters on the ground in key battleground states tonight. Dasha Burns, Pennsylvania. Vaughn Hilliard, Arizona. First, Shaq Brewster live in Milwaukee. Shaq?
Shep, I'll tell you that the interest is high even here in Milwaukee. 1.2 million ballots already sent out. More than 550,000 voters have already cast the ballot. And I spent my day here in Milwaukee talking to those so-called vanishing voters. Voters who voted in 2012 but stayed home in 2016. President Trump won this state by 23,000 votes, but there are about 41,000 voters here in Milwaukee alone who did not cast their ballot after previously voting. Many of them telling me they regret their decision then, but they're saying with the coronavirus and police brutality as they see it, they are committing to coming out and voting this time around. Based on those early numbers that we saw, it looks like they're letting their voice be heard, and they're going to have some success in that regard. Shaq?
From Milwaukee, Shaq Brewster tonight. In Arizona, voting starts tomorrow, and a new poll shows President Trump is losing ground among the 65 and older crowd. Vaughn Hilliard live in Sun City. Vaughn, what are the numbers?
Shep, those numbers are concerning for the Donald Trump campaign here because older voters have been the bedrock here in Maricopa County, the greater Phoenix area. Here in Sun City, there are more than 80,000 voters over the age of 55. Donald Trump won these very voters 4 years ago by 13 percentage points. Now, multiple polls have shown him losing seniors to Joe Biden. I was talking with Larry Vroom. He was one Republican, voted Republican his whole life, including for Donald Trump in 2016. And he said the final straw for him was COVID and the president's response. He said that he is worried and frustrated. This is a community that is still largely shut down. I just got off the phone with a top Republican official here in the state who acknowledged this is not a message that is strong for them. Instead, they're going to be focusing in this last month on the economy that has come back here in the state already, as well as a strong law enforcement message. Just 28 days away here in Arizona. Ballots go out tomorrow, Shep.
Vaughn Hilliard, thanks. Pennsylvania now, and there we want to drill down further. Beaver County. It's historically a divided county on the eastern edge of the state. Saw tight races in 08, 2012, 2016, and the Republican candidate won it every time. Dasha Burns live there. What's the difference this time around, if any?
Shep, it's interesting, those three races, those three presidential elections here in Beaver County in 2008 and 2012, it was close. But in 2016, Donald Trump ran away with it here in Beaver, winning the county by 19 points. And this part of western Pennsylvania is largely how he won the state. So we've been tracking this county over the past year to see if that enthusiasm still holds over to this election day. And what we've been seeing, interestingly enough, Shep, is the coronavirus has not moved the needle for many voters. Instead, it has been issues of race and the president's handling of the Black Lives Matter movement that has had some voters asking themselves some tough questions. And the debate last week, one voter I've been tracking who voted for Donald Trump in 2016 said of the debate, and I quote, "After watching that, I would rather vote for my shoe than either of these candidates." But the numbers do show Joe Biden expanding his lead, especially after that debate, the New Monmouth poll showing him ahead in the state by 12 points. Shep?
Dasha Burns wrapping our trip across the battlegrounds. The heartbeat await debate is tomorrow. The vice presidential nominees set to face off in Salt Lake City. But first, they go head-to-head on safety restrictions. There is a controversy now over having plexiglass on the stage. Only in Corona. Vice President Pence says he doesn't want that on his side. The Commission on Presidential Debates still installing them onto the stage tonight. They say it helps prevent the spread of the virus. But the VP and the Senator Kamala Harris will be 12 feet apart. So Pence's team says accurately that that means the dividers are not medically necessary. So says the CDC. The campaigns and the debate commission are expected to discuss this issue later tonight. And you can watch the debate tomorrow, 9 Eastern on NBC. The COVID outbreak in the White House and highest levels of our national government keeps spreading. And now it reached the Pentagon. And there's a late breaker. NBC News confirms some of America's top generals are self-quarantining after the Coast Guard's second-in-command tested positive. Defense officials tell NBC News that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the heads of the Air Force and Space Force are all quarantining because they, too, may have been exposed. NBC News confirms a fourth White House press office staffer and one of the president's military valets have also tested positive. President Trump is still infected, but says he plans to debate Joe Biden next week, even though he might still be contagious. According to the CDC, somebody infected with COVID can spread the virus for up to 20 days after first showing symptoms. The president's physician insists he did not show any symptoms today after he left Walter Reed just last night. And moments ago, another positive COVID test in the West Wing. Hallie Jackson with that live at the White House. Hallie?
Well, it's a name, Shep, that people will recognize. Stephen Miller, one of the president's closest aides, somebody who has been with him for years. He is now confirming on the record that he has tested positive for COVID. Miller says that he tested negative for the last 5 days. He's been self-isolating. And then up until yesterday, he had those negative tests. It switched over, obviously, to positive today. He is now in quarantine. Our team has looked at this. So Miller travels with the president often, and it looks like the last time that Miller was with the president, and frankly, with Hope Hicks, for that matter, was the same night. It was last Wednesday. You'll remember, Shep, that was the night of that Minnesota rally that we were talking about, the same night that Hicks quarantined herself on the flight home on Air Force One because she started feeling sick, hadn't tested positive yet at that point, so far as we know. So this is significant, as it is not just, you know, we've been talking about White House press staffers, we've been talking about the military valet. This is somebody who has had direct contact with the president, somebody who the president is around often, based on our reporting, involved tangentially in debate prep, speech writing. He has a hand in a lot of facets of what the president does. We should note, Shep, that his wife, Katie Miller, also works for the Trump administration. She is the communications director for Vice President Mike Pence. She actually already tested positive for the coronavirus back in May. She was one of the first White House officials when this pandemic started to come down with the coronavirus. So this is all coming into us just in the last couple of minutes, Shep, but that's the latest from here at the White House.
As for the president, we've seen the tweets today, Hallie, but any official business? Has he been up and about? Do we know?
You know, the White House says he's working. We know he's been on phone calls today. I think he talked already about him pulling out of those stimulus negotiations. It's our reporting, based on folks familiar with that phone call, that he was on the phone with Secretary Mnuchin, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and others. So we know he's been kind of doing that. He's been working Twitter, as he often does, trying to sort of tell the American people that he's still visible and he's still out there. But there are some questions now about what he's going to do next, because he also tweeted something interesting, Shep, that he wants to go to the next presidential debate, which is in Miami next week. Now, that is 9 days from now. And if you look at the start of the president's symptoms, which we believe was Thursday, based on what his doctors say, that is about 14 days from the onset of symptoms. What does the CDC say? Well, they say somebody who's infected with COVID may potentially still be contagious up to 20 days after the start of symptoms, just depending on how severe they are. The president's doctors say they're monitoring his viral load, right, which is doctor speak for they're checking on how much virus he's still putting out there to people, and should have a determination. But right now, the timeline is unclear as to when the president will be able to actually get out of the White House and go do the travel that he is so eager to do.
Hallie, last night you said the nerves were kind of on edge at the White House and that the place was mostly empty. What about tonight?
Emptier, even more ghost townier, Shep. I mean, I'm walking through there. Even the press at this point, we have just candidly pulled back out of some of these spaces just for our own safety. We're wearing masks everywhere we go, except for during these live shots with you. I have mine right here that I'll put on as soon as we're done. Most people are working from home. There are a couple of people here, as we talked about, who have sort of essential, they're deemed essential workers, so they're coming in to conduct business, but mostly working on that cell phone, text and email, Shep, as usual.
Yep. NBC's chief White House correspondent, Hallie Jackson, on the North Lawn. Stay 6 feet apart. We've all been hearing that for months and months, right? Signs posted everywhere in stores and offices. Stay off my lawn and stay 6 feet apart. But now the CDC says 6 feet apart may not be enough in some cases, that the coronavirus may spread beyond that, well beyond it, and they can stay in the air for several hours. Meg Terrell has the CDC's updated guidelines and some context for us. Hi, Meg.
Well, hey, Shep, the CDC really updating, catching up to what the public health community has been saying essentially for months. Now, it does still say that that close contact is really the most common way that the coronavirus spreads. But now updating that sometimes infectious particles can linger in the air for minutes to hours. And that means they can infect people further than 6 feet away or after an infectious person has left a space. Now, the CDC says this typically happens happens within enclosed spaces with inadequate ventilation or where an infected person has been breathing heavily. Now, what does this mean for protecting ourselves? Well, pretty much the same things we already know. Masks, social distancing. Don't go to crowded places if you can avoid it. Take a look at this case study in Arizona, for example, just out today from the CDC. Cases were soaring after their stay-at-home order was lifted. So then they implemented a mask mandate in closed bars, gyms, and other businesses. And cases then started to come down rapidly, Shep.
Meg Terrell, thanks. One of the leading vaccine experts amid this pandemic resigned a couple of hours ago. Dr. Rick Bright said he's leaving his post at the National Institutes of Health because he can no longer work for an administration that, quoting now, ignores scientific expertise, overrules public health guidance, and disrespects career scientists, unquote. He said officials ignored his idea of a national coronavirus testing strategy. In the spring, Dr. Bright said he was demoted because of a whistleblower complaint alleging nepotism within the Department of Health and Human Services. CNBC's reached out to the HHS, but has not yet heard back. Well, breaking records as Gulf states prepare for Hurricane Delta. This could mark the first time in our recorded history that 10 named storms hit the U.S. in one season.
A hurricane is going to strike the state of Louisiana.
Delta is a major storm and getting stronger, barreling toward the Gulf. Tonight, the target area. And can the Gulf South survive another devastating hurricane? COVID in the classroom. How parents are coping with school closures as America's largest cities struggle to stay one step ahead of COVID-19.
All of a sudden, people just said, I've got to upgrade my home. And the floodgates kind of open.
Construction companies struggle to keep up with demand as the pandemic sparks a buying boom in the burbs. And rock and roll loses a legend. Eddie Van Halen, dead today at 65.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith, back in 60 seconds.
A potential disaster is brewing and headed to the Gulf, a major Category 4 storm, and that one is named Delta. Right now, it's churning toward the Yucatan Peninsula and the western tip of Cuba. It's projected to head into the Gulf of Mexico before targeting the battered northern Gulf coast with landfall sometime Friday. Today, the Louisiana governor declared a state of emergency for what will be the 10th named storm to make landfall this season, the most ever recorded. Janice Huff is the chief meteorologist at NBC4 New York. Janice, Hurricane Delta is strengthening so quickly overnight. What do you know?
Shep, this storm is already setting records just on its own outside of the regular season. It went from a tropical depression with 35 mile per hour winds to a Category 4 hurricane with 145 mile per hour winds in just 30 hours. And that's a record all within itself. Now, the storm, as you mentioned, is moving towards the Yucatan Peninsula. It's moving towards Cancun. Cancun hasn't seen a storm like this in about 15 years. It could become a Category 5 storm here. It's not going to weaken that much when it crosses the Yucatan down to a 3. Then back to a 4. It's going to take a westerly track over the Gulf of Mexico before it makes the turn towards Louisiana. So it will sit out over the warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico for a longer period of time. That's why it will re-intensify before it reaches cooler waters towards the Lake Charles area. But that's still not going to drop it too far. It still could be a Category 3 storm when it makes landfall on Friday sometime in the afternoon if it stays on this track. And they don't need this because they just had Laura less than a month ago, or just over a month ago, that was also a Category 4 storm. You mentioned the record-breaking year, 2020. We are up to 25 named storms. The only time that's happened was back when we had the Gulf. We went through the Greek alphabet one other time in 2005. That's the only other time that's happened. These storms in red are all the storms that have made landfall in the United States. You mentioned 9 landfall storms. The only time that happened was in 1916. So we tied the record right now. But when Delta makes landfall, it's going to be number 10. And that will be a brand new record for a ship.
Incredible. We're pulling for him. Janice, thanks so much. So right now, the target zone for Hurricane Delta is Louisiana, the same spot that another hurricane destroyed in last August. It was awful and still is. And from that carnage, a hero rose. Lisa Fuchsler inspired us and does tonight as this new storm roars her way.
It's a war zone out here in Lake Charles, Louisiana. When you look at it, it seems as though bombs were just dropped into the city.
22 days after Hurricane Laura made landfall, Lisa Fugler returned to her storm-ravaged home.
The back part of my home, the roof collapsed in.
Before the hurricane hit, the professional caregiver and her teenage son evacuated together and took her disabled client with them.
He had no family that was able to take care of him, and I refused to put him in a nursing home.
As they bounced from hotel to motel to Airbnb, Lisa's had to cover all the expenses herself.
When we initially left, I had $4,500 in my savings. Now I have $20 in my savings. You want me to cut your hair? I take that as a no. You don't trust me, huh? The uncertainty of everything, of what next, was the most turmoil thing for me. And having to keep it together because I had all these people relying on me.
More than a month after the Category 4 hurricane hit, Lake Charles is still a disaster zone.
I feel as though people have forgotten about Southwest Louisiana. We have to struggle to find food on a daily basis to eat.
I wish I could do more.
Wendy Harper runs At Home Compassionate Care, the company where Lisa works. Before the hurricane, she managed 50 nursing assistants.
COVID put our company on life support, and then Hurricane Laura pulled the plug.
All the damage shuttered the office and forced most clients to evacuate. Today, the majority of her team is out of work, and many, like Lisa, are homeless.
I think that national news covered maybe the story for the first few days, and then it just moves on to other things in this world that maybe aren't so important to us. I'm sorry I'm getting a little emotional, but the devastation that is here is really, it's mind-blowing.
You're not forgotten, Lake Charles. And like you, we're hoping that Mother Nature gives you a break this time. But she is still roaring on the West Coast, roaring right now. The unrelenting wildfires just marked another milestone. A single fire just reached 1 million acres of destruction. It's the Complex Fire along the Coast Range between San Francisco and the Oregon border. And it's been burning since mid-August. All told, more than 8,000 fires have scorched more than 4 million acres since the beginning of 2020, the worst year for fires in the West since record-keeping began. A devastating building collapse in Houston tops a CNBC trip coast to coast. Texas. Three workers killed when a stairwell collapsed inside a high-rise in Houston. The 15-story building was under construction, the victims still buried in the rubble. Firefighters waiting to confirm that the place is stable enough to go in. New York. An SUV plowing into a home on Long Island. The three children inside the car did not get hurt. The mother charged with drunk driving and endangering the welfare of a child. D.C. Panda, and it's a boy. At the Smithsonian National Zoo, a gender reveal for a six-week-old cub. As it turns out, the panda's father painted this with a little help from the zookeepers. The blue tells the story. The new addition is the youngest of four little ones in this panda family. New York. Want a dinosaur? Break out the cash. Bidding for this skeleton of a T-Rex just went live at Christie's. Stan here is named after the archaeologist who found him. And you can buy it if you've got $8 million in spare change on this CNBC trip. Coast to coast. A Texas police officer facing murder charges tonight, just days after he shot and killed a black man in North Texas, according to his fellow officers. We're there as once again people across the country call for justice. And tech giants on the chopping block. In a new report, lawmakers say some of the biggest companies on earth are abusing their power and demanding enormous change coming up. But first, Eddie Van Halen died today of cancer. Rock legend, guitar icon, Eddie was 65. Van Halen revolutionized the electric guitar, his sound hard to imitate, making him one of the all-time greats. His band, one of rock's most successful, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2007, Rolling Stone put Eddie Van Halen at number 8 in its list of 100 greatest guitarists of all time. The stock market had a good morning, but it all went south this afternoon after the president tweeted that he wants to wait until after the election to negotiate an economic stimulus bill, read disaster relief. Bad news for airlines and manufacturers, and that tops CNBC's On the Money. Boeing issuing a grim outlook, cutting its forecast. It now expects the pandemic to hurt sales for more than a decade. Another industry group put on its own report showing airlines will burn through $77 billion in cash over the second half of this year alone. That's $300,000 per minute. We also saw airline stocks fall sharply after the president's stimulus delay. The U.S. trade deficit rose to its highest level in 14 years. The deficit is up in trade. More Americans are buying goods from overseas. It's a politically sensitive issue, especially 28 days from the election. And four of the biggest tech companies in the nation on notice tonight. After a 16-month investigation, a House committee is now out with a 450-page report. And in it, it argues Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Google are all together now monopolies. The committee recommending big changes, including potentially breaking up the companies. This is the part where you hold your breath. On Wall Street, the Dow down 375, the S&P and NASDAQ lower by about 1.5%. I'm Shepard Smith, and this is the news on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour, time for the top of the news, and the Texas Rangers have now charged a white police officer who killed a black man in small town Texas. Officer Sean Lucas charged with murder in the death of Jonathan Price, the move just days after the shooting. Details are sparse even now, but here's what we know. On Saturday night, the officer responded to a disturbance call at a gas station in Wolf City, Texas. That's an hour's drive north of Dallas. The victim's family says he was trying to break up a domestic dispute. According to the Department of Public Safety there, the officer tried to detain Jonathan Price before Price walked away. Officer Lucas first using a taser and then, we're told, a real gun. Price taken to the hospital. He died there later. The Texas Rangers determined that Lucas did not take reasonable action. His bond set at $1 million. Jonathan Price's death follows a summer of outrage. Demonstrators protesting the police killings of several black people, including George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and demanding justice. Tonight, those demands for justice take us to small town Texas. NBC's Morgan Chesky live in Wolf City. Morgan?
Yeah, Shep, good evening. And it's a far different scene here tonight in Wolf City than what we saw just 24 hours ago. Hundreds of people gathering here just at this memorial behind me for Jonathan Price to pay tribute to that young man's life, but also make peaceful calls for justice. And as of today, the family says those first steps towards justice have been made. We know that late last night, as you mentioned, Officer Sean Lucas taken into custody. He's behind bars with that bail set at $1 million. And the Texas Rangers, which have taken over this investigation, have released a statement that really sheds new insight into that fatal encounter that took place late Saturday evening here at this gas station behind me in this small town just an hour northeast of Dallas. And in that statement, Shep, the Rangers say that Lucas responded to that disturbance and then made contact with that man, Mr. Price. And it was at that point that he was asked to be detained, and he resisted in a, quote, non-threatening manner and began to walk away. And it was there that the Rangers confirmed eyewitness accounts saying that the officer deployed his taser and then reached for that service weapon, firing those shots that ended up killing Price, who died in a hospital nearby. Now, just several hours ago, we had a chance to hear from the Price family themselves, and the mother was saying that while she could take a bit of relief and was able to sleep for the first time in several nights following this officer's arrest, she says that the justice process is still only beginning, but it was encouraging that she saw investigators take action and take this police officer into custody. And just within the last few minutes, I've received a statement from the newly acquired counsel representing Officer Lucas. And in this statement, Shep, it says that at no point upon meeting this officer did Mr. Price say that he was uninvolved or an innocent party. And he was saying after repeated instructions, he physically resisted. And that's when the officer was forced to deploy his taser and continue to give Mr. Price instructions. And he continued to resist. And he says that in this case, Shep, Officer Lucas only discharged his weapon in accordance with Texas law when he was confronted by a, quote, aggressive assailant who was attempting to take his taser. So much more details coming into this today. We'll keep you posted with the very latest. We'll send it back to you.
Morgan Chesky live, Wolf City, Texas. COVID Watch tonight takes us to school and fear of COVID in the classroom. According to Education Week, 3/4 of the 100 largest school districts started the year with all remote learning. That's more than 9 million students. Cities and states across the country facing similar challenges when it comes to how our kids learn. In Los Angeles, no school will be allowed to open for K-12 until at least November. In Chicago, similar concerns, and no in-person classes until at least next month. In Georgia, they're mostly open, but the Richmond County School District is closing 4 schools there because of COVID outbreaks. They were only open a few weeks. And in New York, the governor just closed 9, or I should say schools in 9 coronavirus hotspots. CNBC's Frank Holland is at one of them, Mapleton, New York.
I want to go back and see my friends in like actual real life school.
Sophia is a 4th grader at St. Athanasius Catholic in Brooklyn, one of 300 public and private schools in COVID-19 hotspots, now closed by New York State.
I was outraged.
Nicole Durante's daughters were in school full-time before today, having them home another challenge for the mom who lost her job to the pandemic. In New York City, more than half of married couples work outside the home. When it comes to single mothers like Durante, it's 70%.
Now I have become a personal assistant / 4th grade teacher / 2nd grade teacher. So now I can't even look for another job. I don't have the time or opportunity.
But not all parents want their kids in class.
I'm relieved in some ways, but then I'm like, okay, see, like I wasn't being crazy.
Mika Tajimi chose remote learning for her 1st grader to avoid the virus risk in public schools.
Obviously the best choice is to have her be in school with a teacher learning in person. But it's become obvious now that that's not really a reality.
The hotspots have a large Orthodox Jewish population. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo warning again today, houses of worship could be closed.
We've seen one church infect people. We've seen synagogues infect people.
It's being met with resistance as the Orthodox community gathers this week for a religious holiday.
It's critical that public officials start taking a more rational approach.
Rabbi Mati Seligson says closing synagogues or churches could just make the problem worse.
People could just walk over to the next zip code and they're spreading the virus.
And in an effort to slow the virus in the most severe hotspots, the governor announcing that non-essential businesses will be closed and restaurants limited to takeout only starting on Thursday. Local business leaders say it'll be devastating for those restaurants that were just allowed indoor dining at 25% capacity a week ago. Shep, back over to you.
Frank, in Wisconsin, COVID is especially bad. According to Johns Hopkins, it ranks 3rd nationwide in new cases per capita this week. To help stem the spread, the governor there said today he's limiting the size of indoor public gatherings. Restaurants and bars allowed to operate at just 25% capacity. One of the biggest issues in Wisconsin, record high hospitalizations.
Our hospital systems are not invulnerable either. Our healthcare systems are teetering. They're on the brink, and when there's no room at the inn, and that inn is your local hospital, that's a problem for everyone.
Especially hospital patients, some now being waitlisted or transferred. And in Wisconsin, the numbers are still going up. On the vote, you've seen the poll numbers, right? Joe Biden is leading nationally, but we don't vote nationally. And there are important states, very important ones, where the race is exceedingly tight. What's changing voters' minds and why? And our masks and gloves protect us from COVID-19. But what does PPE mean for our oceans? That is a big plastic mess coming up.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith. Back in 90 seconds.
The vote. Earlier this hour, we reported voter turnout is breaking all the records, at least in the early voting. One of those states is Florida. And according to the United States Elections Project, it's second only to Virginia in the number of early voters, 701,000. There was so much traffic that Florida's voter registration website crashed today. The governor, Ron DeSantis, extended the deadline through today at 7 p.m. It just closed. Ellis and Barber live in Miami. Was one day enough?
Well, according to voting rights advocates who filed a federal lawsuit this evening, absolutely not. They say that the governor and the secretary of state in this state, Florida, that they knew this deadline was approaching for a long time, that they were aware that there had been tech issues in the past, and that they knew there tends to be a surge of voters trying to register in the final hours. They also say both the governor and the secretary of state were warned to be better prepared. Instead, in the final hours of the official voter registration on Monday evening, countless Floridians who tried to register to vote online were met with error signs or the website just entirely crashing and kicking them out. The Secretary of State here in Florida, Laurel Lee, says that part of the issue was what she called an unprecedented 1.1 million requests per hour. She says that she and the governor are now working with law enforcement to try and make sure there was not some sort of deliberate act here to undermine the voting process. At a press conference earlier today, Governor Ron DeSantis had this to say.
Well, it's working now, but as you know, I mean, if 500,000 people descend at the same time, I mean, it creates a bottleneck, and that's what we see. So there were people who would go, it couldn't get through, and then they would try again, and they would get through, but it obviously wasn't smooth because you had so much traffic.
So critics say the voter registration deadline needs to be extended at least 24 hours. The only statewide elected Democrat says not planning for a voter surge amounts to voter suppression. Shepard.
Ellison Barber live in Miami. A bunch of new polls in the last 24 hours. We brought you the CNBC Change research numbers last night. It's a tight race in the battlegrounds, even as nationally Vice President Biden extends his lead. Whose minds are being changed? Whose votes and why? NBC Steve Kornacki has the new state-by-state numbers, brand new. What are they telling us, Steve?
Yeah, a couple things, Shep. It's interesting. First of all, you can see the movement nationally. I want to show you this first. This was the national polling average, Real Clear Politics, right before the debate. Biden was leading by basically 6 points nationally. A week later, all those new polls, you can see it. Biden's advantage, 9 points now, up basically from 6 a week ago. A gain on average of 3 points in the national horse race for Biden. That's not insignificant. At the statewide level, we did get a bunch of polls out today. They were kind of throwing us in different directions. There was a new Monmouth poll in Pennsylvania, and holy cow, they had Biden ahead by 11 there. Arizona, we got one with Biden up by 8, but then Florida, here's the poll showing a tie there. I guess that is always the pattern, right? No matter what's happening nationally, it's close in Florida.
And 28 days, man, that's a lifetime for anybody to catch up.
That's right. And, you know, you look back at 2016, there are some, we figured, let's take a look here to compare the polling from 2016 to 2020. Here's what we've seen so far, basically since the start of September. The average daily lead in the poll average for Biden has been 7 points. The best he's done, he's been ahead by 9. And the best Trump has done is he's trailed by 5.8. That's the trajectory so far. In the fall of 2016, just by comparison, the average lead for Clinton, she led on average, but it was about half. She led by about 3.5 points. The best she got up to 7.1 in the average, and Trump actually got within a point. So I would say at this point, Biden's lead has been bigger and it has been steadier than Clinton's. Of course, we still, as you say, have a month to go.
Steve Kornacki, thanks.
You got it.
A government in shambles, an economy in collapse, and the protests that result in Lebanon top our news around the world in 80 seconds. Lebanon.
Our government is trying to kill us in every way.
Demonstrators scuffling with security forces in Beirut. Protesters angry that government corruption has led to the worst financial crisis here in decades. The local currency lost 80% of its value over the past year. Singapore, the government planning to pay people to have more babies. No word yet on how much. Leaders say they're worried that during the pandemic, people won't want to have more kids. Singapore has one of the lowest birth rates in all the world. Belgium, a royal family drama ends. Delphine Boel, now officially a princess. A paternity lawsuit has been going on for decades. The former king decided in January to call off his fight to prove he's the father. For Delphine, she says going to court was about getting family recognition.
Oh, and that's Luca Corberi!
Italy. Road rage on a go-kart track. The Italian racer Luca Corberi crashed out of the World Championship race. Instead of walking away, he took his broken bumper and threw it at a rival. The bumper just missed the racer at top speed, like real-world Mario Kart, on this trip around the world in 80 seconds. So, how much plastic, specifically microplastic, is on the ocean floor? Turns out that answer is more than 15 million tons worldwide. We know because that's the new estimate from scientists in Australia in the first global study of its kind ever done. Microplastics are the tiny pieces, each 5 millimeters or less, in other words, smaller than a pencil eraser, and we're dumping more every day. Masks and gloves tossed during the pandemic are making things worse. They break up along with water bottles and everything else and form a toxic layer deep down. If we keep up this pace, scientists estimate that in 20 years, the plastic in the ocean will weigh more than the fish who live there. If you build it, they will come. If you don't, demand will skyrocket and prices will soar. On the housing front, that's what happens, and that's what's happening now, and developers are scrambling to keep up. Plus, meet the McMillans. They shut down their store, let all their employees go, and blew through all their savings. And tonight, why they say now, they're doing better than ever. Are you thinking about moving? Home prices are up big, fastest pace in 2 years. The value of a home spiked almost 6% in August. That's according to new numbers from the data firm CoreLogic. In some cities like Phoenix and Denver, D.C. and San Diego, prices are even higher. Like everything, it's supply and demand, not enough and too much. And as it will, that's creating bidding wars for existing homes. And for new ones, the builders can't keep up. Here's CNBC's Diana Olick.
All of a sudden, people just said, I've got to upgrade my home. And they came, you know, the floodgates kind of opened.
When the pandemic struck the U.S. last March, builders like Mike Rubenfeld of Mid-Atlantic told us they either slowed production or just shut down. Mid-Atlantic develops communities like this one about 20 miles outside D.C. Construction was deemed essential, but they didn't want to put up a bunch of houses that no one wanted. Well, that was a mistake.
It's really been hard to keep up. Every time we release a new section of lots for people to come look at, they're just immediately snapped up.
Because a house is no longer just a house. It's a gym, an office, a school, a movie theater. And for a lot of people, that means either an upgrade or a move to another area. This community has already surpassed its full-year sales projections, and as much as any builder would love that, Rubenfeld said there are plenty of headaches.
We are definitely having some issues, and I think that's probably true of a lot of builders all over the country. The entitlement process is slower than it has been. Obtaining permits is slower than it has been because folks are working from home. We've been raising prices roughly every 2 weeks, and this is in line to attempt to keep up with things like lumber increases.
Lumber prices are up over 100% due to both the pandemic and to Western wildfires. That's adding about $16,000 to the cost of the average home. Buildable land is up about 10%, and the labor shortage is only getting worse.
This demand, we don't really see a finish line on it anytime soon.
And some builders say they are actually now slowing production again so they don't get caught building so much when the costs are highest. This, as the census just reported, the supply of newly built homes dropped to less than half of what's considered a healthy and balanced market, Shep.
So, Diana, homes are having a great run. Small businesses, not so much. The pandemic hurt some of them and killed off others. But the one we're about to show you, they made it by making it in America. Here's CNBC's Andrea Day.
Everything we had worked for, blood, sweat, and tears for years, was gone in an instant.
The pandemic had just hit, and Jennifer and David McMillan's multi-million dollar home decor business in Harbison, Delaware, was in big trouble.
Our sales dropped over 70% online, and our store sales dropped 100% because we were forced to close.
Their top sellers were these decorative signs, and the factory they used in China to make more than 100,000 of them a year shut down.
We had to lay off our entire team. We just sat there like it's over.
That's when the McMillans made the biggest decision of their lives. Instead of giving up, they doubled down and put their entire life savings into one idea: Made in America.
We had recently sold our primary home, and we used the equity in that and all of our available credit and everything, every resource that we had, to become Made in America. And it was a scary decision.
So right in the middle of the pandemic and with no employees left to help, they started spending.
The first piece of equipment we bought was over $100,000. Trying to figure out how to make everything that was made over in China here, it was completely terrifying. Every day I was questioning, what are we doing? Are we crazy?
Turns out that crazy idea wasn't crazy at all, and they shared it on social.
So this year we are going to be made in USA. So we're really excited about that.
USA.
And then all the orders started coming in like crazy. It's me and my husband and the two dogs, and we are like, how do we ship all these orders out?
The McMillans ended up hiring back their entire team plus more, and they finally reopened the store.
Our sales have skyrocketed, and we have thousands of back orders. We are trying so hard to keep up with the demand that we went and bought another $100,000 piece of equipment to help make this happen.
For the news, I'm Andrea Day.
The Tennessee Titans needed zero positive tests today in order to reopen their facilities. 20 players on the team have already tested positive. Today's results, just ahead. And rockets are cool. This one lifted off to space today. Its mission and the cargo on board. Next. Great news for the Tennessee Titans. The team had no positive COVID tests for the second straight day. That means they can return to their facilities tomorrow. 20 players and staff tested positive late last month. They had to shut down buildings and postpone their game against the Steelers. Fingers crossed, Buffalo at Tennessee this Sunday. Liftoff from Kennedy Space Center, SpaceX launching 60 more of its Starlink satellites into orbit on board a Falcon 9 rocket. Those small satellites joined hundreds more already up in space. Starlink's mission, get internet to everybody on planet Earth. The CEO, Elon Musk, tweeting they'll be rolling out a beta version soon for parts of the United States and Canada. 60 seconds to prime time, and here's what's topping the news from CNBC. President Trump shutting down coronavirus relief talks as millions of Americans struggle to pay the bills. No more negotiations, he says, until after the election. Hurricane Delta taking aim at the Gulf South tonight. It's actually expected to be there Friday as a Category 3 or 4. It's projected to head there before battering the northern Gulf Coast, making landfall on Friday. Today, the Louisiana governor declared a state of emergency for what will be the 10th named storm to hit the U.S. this season, the most ever recorded. And the White House senior advisor Stephen Miller, breaking at the top of this hour, has tested positive for COVID-19. Miller telling NBC News he's been working remotely for the last 5 days and has been self-isolating. He tested negative every day through yesterday, per a White House official. Today he tested positive and is in quarantine. And now, you know the news. For this Tuesday, October the 6th, 2020, I'm Shepard Smith. Thanks for having us in. It's prime time on CNBC. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.